From national news in D.C.
to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol,
this is your Capitol Connection.
And now, bringing the Capitol to you,
here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to the program. We are broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, where we are working every day to advance family, freedom, and life, and to keep you informed on the biggest news in government, policy, and culture from a biblical perspective. And we have some really big news to share about today from the Nebraska Capitol, including how you can directly participate in helping pass an important pro-life bill into law this year. We'll also share some powerful remarks from Attorney General of the United States, William Barr, who spoke last week about the importance of Christian media at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. But first, this week is going to be a critical week for our entire state. And we're talking about LB 814. This is a bill that we've talked about all year long. This is a bill introduced by Senator Geist of Lincoln that would prohibit the practice of dismembering a living preborn child. This is a common abortion procedure in the second trimester. And this bill, LB 814, was introduced on day one of this year's session. And we are now going to be heading into day 41 of a 60-day working session. So when senators reconvene this week, there is less than 20 working days left in this year's session. And this pro-life bill, introduced by Senator Geist, has remained in committee and has not been advanced by Judiciary Committee members. And so this past week, Senator Geist filed a poll motion to bring the bill out of committee and to the floor of the full legislature for debate, and so it can have the opportunity to be voted on by the full legislature and pass into law this year. This is a big deal. Poll motions are a rare but important legislative process where a bill can be moved out of committee without a vote from the committee members. Every single bill that gets introduced gets assigned to a committee. That's step one in the lawmaking process in Nebraska. But unless the committee votes to advance the bill, then all the other senators, the full legislature, never gets a chance to debate or discuss or vote on that legislation. So given how little time is left in this year's session, this was the right thing to do. And this is an incredible opportunity for pro-life Nebraskans and people across the state to rally around this bill and contact their senators and urge them to vote yes on the poll motion for LB 814. Senators will be voting on that poll motion this week. And it's critical that they hear from their constituents who want them to support this bill. Because if this poll motion for LB 814 fails, then the bill will go nowhere. It will remain in committee and it will not even have the opportunity to be debated, let alone pass into law this year. So when this happens, every single senator, so we have 49 state senators, they will all get to vote on whether or not to pull this bill out of the Judiciary Committee to be debated by the full legislature. So when they take this vote next week, they're not voting on the bill itself. They're voting to pull it from committee. And if that pull motion is successful, then it can be debated and voted on. But again, we can't get there if the bill can't be taken up by the full legislature. And so this pull motion is critical to the success of the bill. And make no mistake, Planned Parenthood is working incredibly hard to defeat this bill by keeping it locked in committee. So in order to prevent that from happening and move this bill out of committee, we need a simple majority. We need 25 votes from the full legislature to vote in favor of this poll motion for LB 814. So again, what we're talking about here, it's disheartening that we even have to have this conversation, that this bill even exists, that it even needs to be debated, and that there even needs to be a poll motion in order for the legislature to even be able to debate something like this, something as simple as saying that you can't go in and literally dismember and rip off limb by limb a living preborn child. This procedure, dismemberment abortion, it's typically performed between 13 and 24 weeks of pregnancy. And at that point, it's done because a baby is too large to remove as a whole. So at this stage of development, again, we're talking about the second trimester, a baby has a beating heart, fully developed arms and legs, and can swallow, yawn, hiccup, and smile. Abortionists use a clamp or a grasping instrument with rows of sharp teeth to grab and tear the limbs from a living child's body. After removing pieces of the child's skull, the abortionists will use a curette to scrape the uterus and remove the placenta and any remaining parts of the baby. The baby body parts are then collected and reassembled on a tray to make sure that all of the pieces have been removed and the abortion is complete. I think most people are shocked and horrified to know that this procedure is even allowed and that it's happening every year in Nebraska on living, defenseless preborn children. And if you listened to the show a couple weeks ago, we actually had a former abortionist on the program, Dr. Kathy Altman, who used to be a medical director for Planned Parenthood and actually performed this procedure. She was on the show and she talked with us about what this procedure looks like and why she now is pro-life and testified in favor of this bill to prohibit this procedure. This is something that absolutely should not be tolerated in our society and in modern medicine. And if you didn't get the chance to listen to that interview with Dr. Altman, I would encourage you to go back and listen to that program. If you're not subscribed already to the Capital Connection, you can do so on the podcast app on your phone. Just search for Capital Connection and you'll be able to find that interview. It was so incredibly powerful to hear Dr. Altman's personal story. And why she transitioned and converted from not only being pro-choice, but to actually performing abortions to now advocating for life and testifying in favor of pro-life legislation. And it's something that everyone needs to hear because a lot of people just don't know. They're unaware of the facts about abortion or about unborn children and what this actually looks like here in our state. So this is essential that people know what's taking place and also that this bill is out there. This is a real bill about a real procedure that's taking place in Nebraska. And next week, our state senators, your representative, will vote on whether or not that bill should be debated and voted on by the legislature. So we have an action alert up right now on the homepage of our website at NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. You can go there and get all the information that you need to contact your state senator. It's a simple thing to do, but it's so important. This is when people have to step up, speak out, and take action. Because if we don't, who will? We already know that the other side, they're going to be doing everything they can to defeat this bill and keep it in committee. So please visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org and take just a moment to contact your state senator and voice your support for this bill and encourage them to vote yes on the poll motion for LB 814. Being engaged starts with being informed. And that's a big reason why Christian media is so important. Last week, U.S. Attorney General William Barr delivered remarks at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, and he really emphasized the necessity of faith-based media outlets and why they're so important to combat the rise of corporate media and fake news and to defend democracy, human flourishing, and personal liberty. And listen to this. This is something that I came across this week. When looking at this issue, in the 2016 presidential election, journalists donated nearly $400,000 to presidential campaigns, of which 96% went to Democrat candidate Hillary Clinton. Now, this probably isn't surprising, but it is startling. And the attorney general does a really impressive job of making the case for Christian media and why people of faith need to be involved in the press, as well as the important role that religion plays in a civil society. So this is part of the speech that Attorney General of the United States William Barr made last week at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention.
Now, I trust that everyone has noticed the current intensity and pervasiveness of politics in our lives these days. It has infiltrated and overtaken nearly every aspect of life. sports, entertainment, apparel, technology, cultural associations, and of course religion too, even our eating habits. Politics is everywhere. It's omnipresent. Why is that? It didn't used to be that way. It seems to me that the passionate political divisions of today's world, and especially here in the United States, result from a conflict between two fundamentally different visions of the individual and the individual's relationship to the state. One vision undergirds the political system we call liberal democracy, which limits government and gives priority to preserving personal liberty. The other vision propels a form of totalitarian democracy, which seeks to submerge the individual in a collectivist agenda. It subverts individual freedom in favor of elite conceptions about what best serves the collective. In my view, liberal democracy has reached its fullest expression in the Anglo-American political system. This system is responsible for unprecedented human freedom and progress, and we providentially enjoy its blessings today. The wellsprings of this system are found in Augustinian Christianity. According to St. Augustine, as you know, man lives simultaneously in two realms. Each individual is a unique creation of God with a transcendent end and eternal life in the city of God. We are created to love our Creator in this world and become united with Him in eternity. As Augustine writes in his Confessions, "You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our heart is restless until it rests in you." At the same time, while we work toward our eternal destiny, we live in the temporal world, the city of man. But this world is a fallen one. Man is stubbornly imperfect and prone to prey upon his fellow man. Unless there is a temporal authority capable of restraining the wicked, an authority with the power here on earth, the wicked men would overwhelm the good ones and there would be no peace. In the ancient Greek tradition, the state was a positive moral agency whose purpose was to define for men what was good and to make them so. Augustinian Christianity sharply departed from this conception. It saw the state as really a necessary evil with the limited function of keeping the peace here on earth. These foundational ideas gradually evolved into our current conception of individual dignity, personal liberty, limited government, and the separation of church and state. This process took hundreds of years and involved the amalgamation of many different influences, including those associated with Anglo-Saxon folkways, the common law, the experiences of the English Civil War, the political thought of English Whigs, the moderate Enlightenment, the American Revolution, and the foundation of our great American Republic in 1789. And what has resulted from these centuries of experience is a system that takes man and society as they actually are, precisely because it recognizes that man is imperfect. It does not try to use the coercive power of the state to recreate man and society wholesale. It tends to trust not revolutionary designs, but in the common virtues, customs, and institutions that were refined over long periods of time. It puts its faith in the accumulated wisdom of the ages over revolutionary innovations of those who aspire to be what Edmund Burke called physicians of the state. Liberal democracy recognizes that preserving broad personal freedom, including and especially the freedom to pursue one's own spiritual life and destiny, best comports with the true nature and dignity of man. It also recognizes that man is happiest in his voluntary associations, not coerced ones, and must be left free to participate in civil society, by which I mean the range of collective endeavors outside the sphere of politics. The state is not the same as the voluntary associations that make up civil society. To the contrary, it is the apparatus of coercive power. Under our system of liberal democracy, the role of the government is not to remake man in society. The government has a far more modest purpose, and that is preserving the proper balance of personal freedom and order necessary for a healthy civil society and individual human flourishing. But just as this robust vision of liberal democracy came to fruition in 1789, another conflicting vision was taking shape. This has been referred to as totalitarian democracy. Its prophet was Rousseau, and its first fruit was the French Revolution. In the two centuries since, totalitarian democratic movements have emerged both on the right and on the left. Totalitarian democracy is based on the idea that man is naturally good, but has been corrupted by existing societal customs, conventions, and institutions, including religion. The path to perfection is to tear down these artifices and restore human society to this imagined natural condition. This form of democracy is messianic in that it postulates a preordained, perfect scheme of things to which men will be inexorably led. Its goals are earthly and they are urgent. Although totalitarian democracy is democratic in form, it requires an all-knowing elite to guide the masses toward their determined end. And that elite relies on whipping up mass enthusiasm to preserve its power and to achieve its goals. Totalitarian democracy is almost always secular and materialistic, and its adherents tend to treat politics as a substitute for religion. Their sacred mission is to use the power of the state to remake man and society according to an abstract ideal of perfection. The virtue of any individual is defined by whether they are aligned with that program. Whatever means are used to achieve this perfection are justified because, by definition, they will quicken the pace of mankind's progress toward this earthly paradise. As one political scientist has noted, while liberal democracy conceives of people relating to many different planes of existence, totalitarian democracy recognizes only one plane of existence, the political. All is subsumed within this single project. It is increasingly, as Mussolini memorably said, all within the state, nothing outside the state, nothing against the state. While many factors have contributed to the polarized politics of today, I think one significant reason for our politics why our politics have become so intense, so polarized, so ill-tempered, is that some in the so-called progressive movement have broken away from the fold of liberal democracy to pursue a society more in line with the thinking of Rousseau than with the founders of our great republic. That has played a major role in our politics, becoming less like a disagreement within a family and more like a blood feud between two different clans. Over the past few decades, those further to the left have increasingly identified themselves as progressives rather than liberals. And some of these progressives have become increasingly militant and totalitarian in their style. While they seek power through the democratic process, their policy agenda has become more aggressively collectivist, socialist, and explicitly revolutionary. The crux of the progressive program is the use of the public purse to provide ever-increasing benefits to the public and thereby build a permanent political constituency of supporters who are also dependent. They want able-bodied citizens to become more dependent, subject to greater control, and increasingly supportive of this dependency. The tacit goal of this project is to convert all of us into 25-year-olds living in the government's basement, focusing our energies on obtaining a larger allowance rather than getting a job and moving out and taking responsibility for ourselves. Today in the United States, the corporate or mainstream press is massively consolidated, and it has become remarkably monolithic in viewpoint at the same time that an increasing number of journalists see themselves less as objective reporters of the facts and more as agents of change. These developments have given the press an unprecedented ability to mobilize a broad segment of the public on a national scale and direct that opinion in a particular direction. When the entire press advances along the same track, as Tocqueville put it, the relationship between the press and the energized majority becomes mutually reinforcing. Not only does it become easier for the press to mobilize a majority, but the mobilized majority becomes more powerful and overweening with the press as its ally. This is not a positive cycle, and I think it is fair to say that it puts the press's role as a breakwater for tyranny of the majority in jeopardy. The key to restoring the press in that vital role is to cultivate a greater diversity of voices in the media, and that is where you come in. You were one of the last holdouts in the consolidation of the organs and viewpoints of the press. It is therefore essential that you continue your work and continue to supply the people with diverse, divergent perspectives on the news and issues of the day. And in this secular age, it is especially vital that our religious perspective is voiced.
So where does this leave us? It leaves us with a lot of work, but it's what we're called to do. The Attorney General's contention that faith-based media outlets are necessary to safeguard American freedom and preserve our religious foundation is in large part why Nebraska Family Alliance exists, and it's why we produce Capital Connection every week. We want to keep people informed of the real news on the issues we care about, and to provide that news and information from a faith-based perspective so that the people of God can stand firm and take action. So once again, please visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org for information on how to contact your state senator and ask them to vote yes on the poll motion for LB 814. This is a big moment for our state, and it's time for us to step up and defend the lives of preborn children in the womb. We'll be back next week. Until then, I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for the Nebraska Family Alliance, hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.